at the University of Wisconsin and with the Network for the Improvement of Addictions Treatment. Kim has tremendous experience with organizational change. She was the state director in Maine before she became part of NIATX. And that's part of her story, is how did Maine change? How did she go through that change? One of the things we've heard in our 5x5 presentations was that, you know, physician resistance, staff resistance, how do we deal with those issues? We've heard that in our coaching calls with you all. So Kim's going to tell us what she knows about staff resistance. Kim?
Yeah, thanks. I'm going to wander out of the screen very quickly.
That's okay.
I'm standing still. Can you hear me in the back? Okay. And make signs if you can't, because my voice will probably go down. So the gentleman from, is it Eagleville?
It's from me.
I wanted to just share my conversion experience as well, because it came when I was running a treatment program. I'm trying to think when, a while ago. And we had our first methadone program open in the greater Portland area in Maine. And I was in the ladies' room at a conference where the person who was the SSA at that point in time had tried to put on a conference about medication-assisted treatment to kind of convince us all that we need to change. And this is, I don't know, probably close to 20 years ago now. And I was in the ladies' room, and I looked at her, and I just said, it feels like what we're saying is we're admitting failure, that what we do doesn't work. And you know, and that felt bad, but over the years I've kind of thought, that is what, I mean, what we were doing wasn't working for some people. We need to come up with something else. So that was my conversion, when I accepted that I wasn't going to cure everybody with therapy. So I'm going to talk about staff resistance, and it's been interesting because that's been a big, I don't know if I have anything new to say, because you've all talked about this morning already. Although somebody said they didn't have it, and I'm trying to remember who was speaking that said they didn't have it. And so whoever that was, my request to you would be to check out that understanding, because what happened in Maine is that all of the executive directors thought that other people's staff had these issues about not accepting medication, but their staff were going to be fine. And what we found, what we decided to do, was to do what we always ask you to do, is to check out your beliefs, measure it, and then we made a change project out of what we had found, because we were kind of surprised by what we found. So this is data just from one agency, not from the whole state. And I think, is Kelly here? Is the report? They did a report. Oh, you're filming me. They did a report. Did I send that to you? Did I send you the whole report?
Mm-hmm. It's behind the slides in the book.
Okay. Yep. So I have this. This is data from one state, but I did, in your book, there's a report from all of the providers that participated in a similar project to what you're doing around increasing access to medication. That was in the public system. So, I can't even read this from back in the back. So, they asked questions of their staff. Each provider did a survey with their staff and asked questions about what their beliefs were about medication. So here's one of the questions. Medication-assisted treatment allows patients to better control drinking addiction. Poorly worded, but that was what they used. And this is what they found before they did anything to try to change it, is that there was, and these are actually for this agency, this is the number of staff. So a few staff said they kind of disagree. Most of the staff said they sort of did agree, and only a couple strongly agreed. So that was alcohol addiction. This one is drug addiction. What's kind of interesting is that there were a lot more staff that thought that medications didn't work for drug addiction. Now, why do you think that is? People don't like methadone, right? That's the medication they thought of, and that's what they, it was about the specific medications that they were thinking about. They thought that they believed that didn't work. So then when we asked the staff why they didn't like medication-assisted treatment or what they thought was wrong with it, there's there's a lot of concerns about it not being effective. And so that's something to explore with your staff. This whole issue of replacing one drug with another, we've talked about that a lot today. Have you actually encountered that in your own organizations?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really kind of depends. But in different geographic areas and in different systems, that comes up a lot. Patients just want it to sell. Diversion is both a real issue, but it's also a huge fear that people have when it comes to medication. I think this was one of the biggest ones, for Maine anyway. The next one is that more than half of the clinicians in that system were in recovery themselves. And the self-help community was really anti-medication. And so there was a lot of peer pressure within the self-help community, where more than half of the clinicians were involved in that themselves, against medication. And that actually, I mean, I think back to when I was running an agency, that had deep, deep roots in that particular AA community, against any medication. So even psychotropics for people who had mental illness, there was still those roots of you shouldn't need any medication. So there was still some clinging to that. Then there's the whole issue of side effects that are visible, like nodding off. And in Maine, where we had a physician who did some pretty high doses for some people and had a reputation about that, the whole nodding off thing was a huge controversy. People sitting in group and nodding off. So the sedative effect. Whatever you think of those reasons, for people that believe them, they're legitimate. And so you have to think about how are we going to address that. So I know, and we've talked about this a little bit this morning, I have some thoughts about what you can do. But what have you all done that's worked to address staff resistance? And also what's worked for you? Because a lot of us have sort of had a conversion around medication. I've walked out of that.
We talk about successes. One of the biggest things for me was listening to a client, this opiate addict, and talking about the positive response, and that changed my mood. And I think clients see that, but those issues are a reality. If you have a client dying off the grid, that's a trigger for a client. I think clients get real pissed.
You guys are still dealing with it, so. Anybody else?
I think it has a lot to do with training and mission. Bob, people like I said earlier. I think that something else occurs, and that has to do with time. And a lot of old timers will be fading out, and new people, younger people coming in, and I think that there's an elevated attitudinal change with that, for attrition, the new ideas will be evolving and coming in. I see it, I can see differences in AA today than 20 years ago. It's different. So.
Yeah.
Actually, the client that I have, the staff, sorry, I meant to break this one, the staff that I have the most resistant to this is
who managed to do it without medication.
Yeah, he's the most resistant to it. He's to the point of control.
I know I do this too, right? It's like if I can do it, anyone can do it, right? I mean, we all sort of have that attitude. It's like, if I could do that, why couldn't someone else? And I think that's hard for people who in recovery, who are working in the field, that they did it without medication, and they might have, gritted their teeth and hung by their fingernails, but they worked through it, and why shouldn't anybody else?
And I think they also see people who tried
with nicotine replacement in any way made a difference? Because I don't think there's the same sort of stigma associated with it, with taking the nicotine patch. So many people have benefited from that. And I just wonder if that even some folks in treatment, I mean, I don't know if AA has or NA has any sort of, you know, issues around use of the nicotine patch. I know there's a lot of coffee and tobacco use in AA meetings historically. So I'm just wondering if that experiences at all brought into this discussion. And why not, if, for those who can see parallels and maybe transfer a little of the destigmatized,
It's something to try, right? So something, if someone will try and come back next time and tell us how it worked, do a little pilot test and let us know how it worked, because it's logical.
Does
right?
anybody have, I mean, even people who have concerns about other replacement modalities for addiction have a concern about people using the nicotine patch with smoking?
My physician at nursing has more problems with nicotine replacement than Suboxone. Because they think that they're going to have to watch the patients, that they have a cigarette, that they're going to have a heart attack, end up on the floor. So,
but it's not a philosophical,
right.
It's more of a management
right,
issue.
Right.
Yeah, the stigma related, I mean, it's as much as you can parallel it based on addiction and a replacement therapy, the stigma that goes with smoking a cigarette versus shooting dope is just completely, in my world, it doesn't parallel with it, although, like you said, there is certainly some sort of parallel to it. So I haven't seen any type of impact on
it. It seems like most people are quite sympathetic to how hard it is to quit smoking,
mm-hmm.
right? And if somebody uses a nicotine patch, it's not a crutch. It's hard enough. You don't need to make it hard.
Maybe two.
Well, I just wanted to comment on another project that I'm working on related to this. I'm working with a group of programs that are programs for the seriously mentally ill that are required by the money they're receiving to do no smoking. And the hysteria in those programs about using the nicotine patch or Chantix is like over the top. And it doesn't have to do so much with, or they're not saying it has to do with its replacement. But it is seriously you want knowledge. They don't understand, they have, you know, you have people, nurses saying, yeah, you add Chantix to anything else these patients are getting, they're going to drop dead. Well, they're not going to, I mean, there's all kinds of misinformation floating around out there about the use of nicotine replacement.
So, Laura, there's your answer. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it sounds really a good central belief of people that are in recovery to accept medication-assisted treatment. Is if, you know, if I did it without, well, why my patients cannot do the same? Why they we have to offer this? I think immediately thinking, and this is the research about it. What about training this staff members there in recovery and saying, what about your road to full recovery would have been much shorter? If you'll be like, I've lost less amount of job, less medically ill, less legal trouble, and all that, would you if you go back and somebody would have offered you that, you would, maybe still the final point would be in full recovery without any MAT, would you accept that? Would you accept that in the past? I think this would be a way to kind of see the option and make the staff members that are in recovery to consider to be more open to that option.
So there's some options to try, and I guess what I would say for all of you is first identify the problem. Do you have a problem? Do your staff resist this? So for some of you it might be obvious, for some of you it might be more subtle. And then try something and measure it. So here's some things that have worked for other groups, other organizations. They may work for you, they may not. That's why we say pilot something. Education, I mean, we're giving you some here today. We're recording this so that you can share it with your staff, and I'm glad to know that we are. Hearing from people who use medication, so we've heard that worked. Hearing from people that use medication to support their recovery, because people need to see the success stories. And if you're working in a drug-free program, and you only see the medication-assisted treatment failures, right? That's, you get the people that it didn't work for. So you don't see the successes. And so bringing people in, I know for one of the treatment agencies in Maine, they brought in a few people that were pretty well known in the community, but that their medication supported recovery was not that well known, to talk to the staff about how important the medications were to them. If you try it with a few patients, it's hard for people, and this is one of the reasons why pilot testing works, is it's really hard to say, I'm digging my heels and I'm never going to do that for anybody. It's relatively hard to refuse saying, well, let's just try it for a couple patients and see how it works, or a couple clients and see how it works. It's kind of an easy way to sneak something through the back door. Now, you all know that requires a lot. Just doing something for a couple patients requires as much sort of preliminary work as it does for 1,000 patients. But it's a way of selling your staff. And this is from Tom's experience at Penn Foundation, getting the medical and the counseling staff together to talk about their patients and sharing information. Because so often, I know in the treatment agency I ran, I had a medical director that came in once every week for an hour, once every 2 weeks for a couple hours. And he was basically seeing patients, and just actually have the time to sit down with the clinicians and kind of share information and knowledge about the patient's condition hardly ever happened. And it makes a lot of sense because they have very different perspectives. So the folks in Maine did all of those things and more. And for this particular treatment agency, these are the outcome data. They decided that what they did, their change project to work with the staff on acceptance of medication, was actually a success. So the pre is the blue, I showed you that before. And the red and white is the post after they did their change project, where they basically did these things. They brought in some medical education, they brought in some patients that were successful. They tried a couple and see how it would work for them. And I don't know why we now have a strongly disagree, but medication allows patients to better control their drinking. And the good thing is that the strongly agree went up. I don't know what happened to the, I suspect the strongly disagree person doesn't work there anymore. which is also, I have to tell you, that is another, I'm just going to confess it, it is another way of dealing with it, right? I mean, at some point,
unless it goes,
you say, it's my way or the high, I mean, this is how we're doing it now, and you can work with us or you cannot. I probably should have said that on a recording. But frequently in these changes, you have a person. It's usually one or maybe two that just is not willing to change, and that may be how the change gets made.
There's still some people who don't believe in blood transfusions.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Right. Right. So ultimately, that you're the boss. You get to decide. There's very few things we have control in our lives, but there are some things we do. And here's the one for treating addiction to drugs, and you can see that really changed dramatically in terms of what people thought. I didn't have this one on the pre, but there's insufficient evidence regarding medication's efficacy, and you can see that changed pretty dramatically too, that the majority of their staff wound up believing that there was evidence that medication worked. So that's all I have. I will say one other thing, because you're talking a lot about where you send people and how they get support post your services. And in West Virginia, where we worked, that was probably the biggest problem. They had no recovery supports, no self-help that was supportive of people on medication. So they created a whole system of self-help groups for people. And you can say, well, parallel system is a bad thing, but it was better than nothing for these folks. And so they created a whole system of self-help groups for people who were in recovery using medication. And that was the way it worked for them. It was kind of a lot of work to get it started, but now it's proliferating on its own. And the last I knew, there were 10 or 11 groups going on in West Virginia, which is a tiny little state, to help people who were using medication in their recovery. So sometimes it's a lot of work to get things started, but then once you get the ball rolling, it kind of takes off on its own. So,
Questions, comments for Kim? Thank you, Kim. Kim mentioned West Virginia. Both West Virginia and Maine were participants in Advancing Recovery. And the paper that reports those data is the first paper in your supplemental materials. So I encourage you to take a look at it. The Advancing Recovery model, the experience